Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 326. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beer and medieval cities and more beer as we go to Belgium. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one is a little disconcerting, but also good news, because the CIA thwarted Al-Qaeda again this week, but it thwarted them with a second attempt to do an underwear bomber, because that was so cool the first time. And speaking of uncool things, a passenger was woken up by a flight attendant, and apparently the flight attendant rolled up a magazine and tapped him on the knee with it, so of course he is suing. I'll see your rolled up magazine and match you with a frivolous lawsuit. Probably our worst story of the day, though, is there is a child that is missing in England whose picture has been everywhere, as you might imagine, and for some reason, her picture, this is a toddler, showed up in an advertisement promoting holidays in Portugal. The only thing I can think of is they were sitting there one day at breakfast saying, "I'd like a picture of a cute toddler. Hey, look, there's one on the milk carton." For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Sam Oppenheim, who's come to talk to us about Belgium. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be back again.
And I say back to the show, for those of you who are not longtime listeners, you may not know Sam. He's been on the show, we just decided he's been on four times, talking about trekking in the Himalayas in northern India, going to Cuba, going to Laos, and going
Bali.
To Bali. Exactly. It's hard to keep track of. Sam, welcome back.
Thanks. This is my first time talking about Europe, so it'll be exciting.
Well, and this is a little different trip since this trip was a baby moon.
Correct.
I don't even think you were engaged last time you were on the show.
No, I don't believe I was.
So congratulations and congratulations, first of all.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
So, and as you're expecting a child, you wanted to go do a trip before the trekking got a little more difficult.
Exactly.
And you decided on Belgium. What made you choose Belgium?
So what made us decide on Belgium is that my wife Mina's best friend, or one of her close friends, lives in Brussels and has been there for 3 years.
Okay.
And so we were able to stay with a local, which always makes travel more affordable and more enjoyable.
And we're going to talk mostly about Belgium. We're going to do, I think, two side trips, one into the Netherlands and one into Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. But what itinerary would you recommend for us?
So I'll start by saying my itinerary, and then I'll make a recommendation, if that works.
That sounds good.
Most people would use Brussels as their starting point because it's got the most international connections. It's easy to travel to, and it's well connected to everything else. That's what we did. We rented a car. But the transportation system in Europe, as most people are aware, is fantastic. And Eurail connects all the locations we're talking about. There are two cities very close to Brussels, Ghent and Antwerp. Most people who have a lot of time on their hands will go to both. And some people will avoid them because they aren't as perhaps well advertised in the travel magazines as Bruges, which is another northern Belgian city that has great tourist infrastructure and is a wonderful location to visit. All those locations are in northern Belgium, and they're in the section called Flanders. Belgium is divided in half, north and south, mm-hmm. with the Dutch-speaking half on the north called Flanders, and they're Flemish, and the southern, more French-speaking section called Wallonia.
And you say Dutch-speaking, but I don't think they call it Dutch there. I think it's Flemish there.
Correct.
You can speak both and understand each other, but...
Yes, it is a variation on Dutch. Mm-hmm. I heard it referred to as Dutch in a travel guidebook.
Okay.
Because I guess if you're reading the street signs, it reads like Dutch as opposed to speaking it. Mm-hmm. The southern half is Wallonia and is French speaking, and we did not spend as much time in there, but it's very different. The northern half is lowlands. It's a low country. It's like the Netherlands. And the southern half has hills and mountains and castles and more river valleys, and it's really quite nice. We went down there to Bouillon, which has a castle, and Orval, which has a abbey where they brew beer. And Luxembourg, which is its own country where they speak Luxembourgese, which is, I guess, a kind of a variation on French and German, I think.
You say that with great confidence.
Yeah, I didn't really get to learn any Luxembourgese.
Okay.
I did stay with a local for lunch and walking around the city, and she complained about how a lot of locals don't speak Luxembourgese. But if you want a civil servant job, you have to.
Okay. And I was thinking it was a variation on German, but I could be wrong.
I think it is more of a variation on German.
Okay.
So that was my itinerary. There are some other cities in Belgium, but we did not have the time to go see them. And one of the sites we left off our itinerary that I think people who travel there should be aware of, that I feel like following in Rick Steves' tradition, I left something to come back for, is Ypres, which is Y-P-R-E-S, mm-hmm. and is a World War I battlefield somewhere near Bruges. You could definitely do a day trip.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that close to Bruges. Okay.
Yes. So that's one of those sites where they have the World War I trenches still dug out with interpretive centers and guides. And I met a couple who were convinced it was one of the highlights of their trip, but I didn't have time to fit it in.
Excellent. So you started in Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you recommend we see in Brussels besides your friend?
Right. So Brussels, in general, I've heard positive and negative things about, and I can kind of concur that it is not one of the most charming cities in Europe. It's definitely, I guess you would say, second tier beneath like Paris and London. But it's surprisingly ethnically diverse. It has wonderful outdoor markets. It has a really great set of charming architectural areas that you can visit and tourist sites that are really quite interesting. I'll go into a few details. And perhaps the most fascinating thing might be the culinary options, because Belgium is sort of one of the top food destinations, I would say, in Europe. It was really phenomenal in terms of both beer options, chocolate options, Belgian waffles, frites, and dining with, you know, sort of a French influence. In addition, over the past, I guess, 20, 30, 40 years, or probably even longer because the Belgians invaded the Congo, there's been an influx of Moroccans and Congolese and other Arab and Muslim and other North African groups of people who've been adding more cultural diversity. It's also the EU capital, sort of. So there's an EU section and a lot of expats. And the downtown has a lot of fantastic five-star dining options.
Okay. And the frites we're talking about there would be, we would call them French fries.
Correct.
Or occasionally when we're appealing fairly persnickety freedom fries. But
they should be called Belgian fries, right?
Should be Belgian fries, although we don't serve them with the mayonnaise. I think that would be a difference there.
Correct. So I guess since you brought that up, I'll cover the base real quick. There are two ways to get frites in Brussels or in Belgium. This is true for all of Belgium. One is from a stand, so there's no seating. And the stands have the different dips. They have the different flavors of mayonnaise-based dips. They sometimes have as much as 10 or 15 or 20 different flavors. And then the other way to get them is at a restaurant. But the restaurants don't have the dips. There's some sort of a union protection racket. You can only get the flavored dips at the stands.
Okay.
And that's part of what makes it really special. I mean, French fries taste great. Frites taste great. Belgian fries taste great. But the dips are quite special.
Okay. So that might be what turns it into fast food versus not fast food, is you just wouldn't do that at a restaurant or something. Okay.
Yeah, I asked, but there was a restaurant that was advertising frites. Mm-hmm. And I asked if we could have the dips, and they said no. And then my local friend, she's an expat, but she lives in Brussels, explained.
Okay. And then you said you were going to talk about some of the sites in Brussels.
Correct. I'd like to start with something non-traditional. There's a Sunday market at Midi Station, train station, in the middle of Brussels. Mm-hmm. And it's a fantastic little local market. It's not really meant for tourists. And we had the most amazing brunch there. There is a Moroccan crepe where they pile a flatbread. It's not a French crepe pancake. It's more of a flatbread mm-hmm. with cheese, olives, figs, dates, red peppers, and honey. So it might take a minute to figure out whether that would taste good or not, but I'll tell you it tasted fantastic.
Interesting. I can't picture the flavor, but interesting.
From there, most people visiting Brussels would go to the downtown, which is what we did as well. Mm-hmm. All the great Belgian cities have town squares and guild halls. This is the old medieval organization. So if you're going to do a walking tour of Brussels, you would definitely want to start with the old town square and guild halls section. Mm-hmm. And that's also near the famous mannequin piss statue, which is the famous little boy relieving himself, which is a little bit of a letdown because you've seen it parodied so much. And then in real life, it's about a foot tall.
Yeah, it is a little boy.
Yes. And apparently he has, I think, over 700 costumes. But my friend said she's never seen one on him. And we were also so unlucky as to not see a costume on him. So it's supposedly a real treat to get to see him dressed up in his finery. But that was not something I was so blessed with. Perhaps a repeat visit would have warranted more enjoyment. But it was actually Easter Sunday when we arrived, and we were hoping he would be dressed up as a little bunny rabbit, which brings me to the second main thing to see in Brussels, which is the Grand Sablon, where they have all the great Belgian chocolatiers. And since it was Easter, we were blessed with tons of displays of giant chocolate babies and giant chocolate eggs and giant chocolate bunnies. The artisanry with which they prepared the chocolates were phenomenal, and they tasted delicious, and they had variations on flavors I hadn't had before. I guess one of the things they're most famous for is pralines.
Okay.
Which is the soft filling made from nuts and sugar inside of the chocolate, and it's mixed with chocolate as well.
I usually think almonds. I don't know if that's true in Belgium as well.
Yeah, I think pralines are usually almond-based. Of course, nowadays you can get any flavor you want in a chocolate, which is part of what's so exciting. The one that I enjoyed the most was Pierre Marcolini, which is one of the seven great chocolatiers of Belgium. And they had the most expensive and most decorative and most exorbitant chocolates, including ones with saffron flavors and lavender flavors. And I guess I'm thinking of the spices more than the fruits. But if you can imagine it, they've probably experimented with it. Then from Pierre Marcolini, we went to the other ones, which included the famous Wittemann and Leonidas and Newhouse and, I guess, Godiva.
Yeah, okay.
So we basically went to each chocolatier and tried three or four different chocolates. They were amazing flavors, and we brought some home, of course.
Excellent. And what else would you recommend we see in Brussels before we leave the city?
So we've seen the downtown, which includes the Hotel de Ville, the town hall. Nearby is the Royal Palace and some Art Nouveau buildings, including the Old England building, which is also a musical instrument museum. I would recommend, if you're not full of chocolate, also getting some Belgian waffles while you're walking around. There's plenty of places where they make them fresh, and they pile on whatever you want, chocolate, ice cream, speculoos cream, which is a spread unique to Belgium and the Netherlands. It's kind of a gingerbread flavor.
Oh, interesting. Okay. That one I am not familiar with.
You should definitely try to get some. It's not to be missed. It's delicious. There's also a monstrosity called the Palais de Justice, which is larger than St. Peter's in Rome and is intimidatingly ugly, but kind of neat to see, and you can't miss it. There's also a free elevator that takes you up and down to the higher levels of the town center right next to the Palais de Justice. And I recommend that on any walking tour of downtown Brussels.
So the Palace of Justice would be one of the government buildings.
Correct. It's the government building built on the backs of the exploitation of the Congo.
Okay.
Also in Brussels, there's a tremendous number of museums, but the only one that I went in and really enjoyed a lot was the Musée Royal. I can't pronounce French. It's the Royal Museum of Beaux Arts. And it has Rubens, Rembrandt, Bruegels, and Bosch. So if you're into your Flemish medieval painters, it's a must-see.
Excellent.
I guess there's also flea markets. Depends on which day you're there. The one at Place des Jeux des Balles is there every day. And other ones vary on which day you're traveling. But you can't miss them. Pretty much in every city in Belgium, there's a street market. So there's a few other things now. These are more side trips as opposed to the walking tour in the downtown. One is the Art Nouveau walking tour we did one day. So Art Nouveau is an art style from, I guess, 1890 to 1910, and it's most famous in Belgium and France, I think. I always think of the train station entrances that say Metro in France.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, nature-inspired curving lines, ironwork. So there's a great selection of buildings that are Art Nouveau. There's a walking tour in the Lonely Planet guidebook that we did, but I noticed other tourists with different guidebooks doing the same walking tour. There's also a brewery that's a fantastic self-guided tour called Cantillon. And what makes it so special is I think it's the last brewery in the world doing large scale, but it's still small scale, wild yeast, naturally fermented beer.
So they've gone out and trapped wild yeast to use in their beer.
Exactly. They don't clean the walls. They're full of, well, not full of, but you know, there's some dust and some cobwebs. And that's part of the magic. And they use the local water from the local river, and they leave it out overnight, and then they bottle it for a year, 2 years, or 3 years, and then they mix it so that the flavor is just right. And they leave it out in the air. So the yeast may come from the water, the yeast may come from the air. It's a little bit of magic. But they do not have a cultivated yeast of one species that they use every time. Part of what makes each beer that you buy in the world taste the way it tastes is it's a scientific process, and they make sure they use the same yeast every time, the same temperatures. But in this place, although they keep a lot of standardization, they use whatever yeast happens to land in the fermentation.
Hmm. Okay.
So when you go on the tour, they're very proud of it, and they talk about how it's a traditional way that beers used to be made before modern times, and they preserve it as a museum. Their beers taste more like wines, which it's called a lambic beer, but it's not what you might get if you order a lambic outside of Belgium, because nowadays most lambics are made in a similar way, but they're sweetened, and they're a lot of times with cherry or blueberry. This brewery, again, it's called Cantillon, and it's right near the Midi train station in the middle of Brussels. Mm-hmm. They do have flavored beers with raspberries and blueberries, but the main starting point is a kind of slightly bubbly champenois-style beer. But it tastes in your palate more like a wine. It's like a beer-wine hybrid, sort of.
Hmm. Okay.
So, I don't know. Supposedly, that may have been how beers used to taste.
It seems like it would be less hops then, probably.
Right. They do, I think, use some hops, because they had hops in the museum, and they use that the same way they use hops in all beer, which is to change the flavor, right? They put hops in a bag in the beer and use it to moderate the bitterness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Change the flavor. So they still do that.
Hmm. Okay.
I think that covers most of Brussels.
Okay.
And to be honest, Brussels was not the highlight of the trip. I mean, it's a really nice place, and there's a lot to do. But the rest of the trip was more exciting, I would say. So we took a side trip to Ghent. It's about an hour from Brussels. Mm-hmm. We rented a car, which allowed us to do a lot more. But even by train, it's only an hour. The reason to go to Ghent is to see canals and a medieval city center. They destroyed the downtown of Belgium when they rebuilt the city.
Brussels, you mean?
Sorry, Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
Ghent preserved the medieval downtown. It also is a university town. However, most guidebooks would tell you that Bruges is a better place to see the same type of architecture and canals and medieval city center. And I sort of agree, but Ghent is a little charming because it has a student population and a living population, and it's not just a tourist town. Some people complain that Bruges is a little bit like Disneyland. Just as a highlight, in Ghent, don't miss the castle. There is a castle that is called Het Gravenstein, the Castle of the Counts.
Okay.
And from the top, you can view the whole city. It's well worth the entry fee. They also have a really nice armory inside of Ghent where you can see suits of armor and all sorts of medieval implements and torture tools that you might not have seen otherwise.
And that's spelled H-O-T with a hat over the O, I'm guessing?
I wrote it down without the diacritics. Okay. I wrote H-E-T, G-R-A-V-E-N-S-T-E-N.
Okay, so that's a different word than I was going for. Okay.
As far as dining options, we went with the Lonely Planet's recommendation of a place called Pak Huis, which I don't usually mention where I chose to dine, but it's an old factory, a warehouse, a textile warehouse, and they converted it into a restaurant. It's got a gorgeous interior. It's really a special space. So it should be in all the guidebooks, but if not, I recommend it.
And what Belgian food, I assume, but what type of food did you have there?
So we had a little bit of kind of French-Belgian modern food. I had salmon, and Mina had a soup, I think. But, you know, you can go there and have a beer. You can have tea. You can have sandwiches. The desserts were nice as well. It's the ambiance and the service, the skylight over the top. You know, it kind of looks like you're in a train station with the small pieces of glass with the ironwork.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
It's really beautiful interior.
Could have been on your Art Nouveau tour, it sounds like.
Exactly. Okay. And I can't believe it was a warehouse. I'm like, really? This beautiful building was just used to store things? I am going to give Ghent a little bit of a short shrift to move on to other sites. It is very nice. It's charming. It's small. It's medieval. But Bruges did outshine it a little bit. And before I get to Bruges, I'd like to cover Antwerp real quick.
Mm-hmm.
We did a side trip to Antwerp from Brussels using public transit. It's about an hour on the train, very affordable. And Antwerp is kind of the Soho of Brussels. It's the, I use a New York term there, but it's, you know, art, fashion, design, more modern. It's very nice. It's smaller scale in Brussels, easier to get around. It was really enjoyable to spend a day there. It's very modern. The most interesting things to see there, I would say, is the train station itself, which is extremely grand, renovated with an old-fashioned stone facade inside on one end, beneath the old-fashioned arched roofing with ironworks. But then below, all of these modern subfloors with multiple levels of trains, tracks, and it's just, this interior space is extremely unique. And you can see the train station from anywhere in the town, like as if it was a cathedral. And you can recognize it from the highway while driving. It's a very unique and beautiful train station, one of the best I've ever been in. In addition, the Diamond District in Antwerp is very famous, where you can see a lot of Orthodox Jews who buy and sell and cut diamonds. There's a cathedral, just like every other old city. In fact, a side piece of history, I'm pretty sure that Belgium's identity is based on Catholicism. I think I heard that when France, Germany, and the Netherlands had the Protestant Reformation, a lot of Catholics felt oppressed, and Belgium ended up being kind of a piece of Netherlands and a piece of France where the Catholics could have their own identity separate from being oppressed by Protestants.
I would disagree with you just a little.
What would you say?
Because Belgium's identity really goes back to Napoleon. Basically, after the Treaty of 1814, Belgium was split off from France by the powers that had defeated her as a sort of a buffer against French power, which was very significant because in 1815, when Napoleon came back and the Battle of Waterloo was fought in Belgium, it wasn't clear to the Allies that the Belgian soldiers were going to stay loyal to the Allied cause throughout the whole battle or whether they would just revert to be French.
Ah. I didn't do my research, but my two local expats told me that some of its identity was as a Catholic refuge.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not really sure how it all works out. That's really interesting.
Generally, you didn't need so much of a Catholic refuge because there was more of a time when you needed the opposite. I mean, the Catholic religion wasn't legal in the Netherlands, but it also wasn't necessarily particularly oppressed. I mean, you can find the hidden churches in Amsterdam, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But during much of that time, there was the War of Spanish Secession, for instance, where you have the Netherlands trying to split off from the Habsburg Empire, so the Spanish-Austrian Empire. So,
right.
Which was very Catholic.
To make another side comment, they celebrate some of the wars in that time period during the Spanish Succession with annual festivals if you visit the Netherlands at the right time of year.
Excellent.
So, yes, we were finishing up Antwerp, I think?
I believe so, and I think you were heading to Bruges.
Correct. So leaving Antwerp, it's also famous for having some of the best beer bars in Belgium. One of them is named Culminator and was highly recommended in the Afar magazine article that I read before going, which talked about where to go to taste all the beers of Belgium. So if you're in Antwerp and you want to try to taste a lot of the beers rather than going to different locations to taste them, that bar has 700 beers. And the Café Horta is also an Art Nouveau-inspired modern cafe that has another beautiful interior with glass walls and is very well reviewed, and we enjoyed it while we were in Antwerp. So I want to recommend that. So after finishing up Brussels, Ghent, and Antwerp, most people visiting Belgium will go to Bruges. And Bruges, we used for our inspiration the movie In Bruges. Have you seen that?
I have not. No, when we were in Bruges, it was a decade or two before that movie came out. So
very good. So that's what made me inspired to want to go there. The movie is a little bit violent, but it's also fantastical. It talks about how wonderful Bruges is. Bruges is one of your standard medieval cities surrounded by canals with cobblestone streets and is possibly most famous for its very tall belfry or bell tower in the center.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend that the highlight of the trip, as touristy as it is to take a canal boat tour on the canals. I think every single person who goes there does that, but it's well worth it.
We did that. We climbed the belfry and took the canal boat tour, yeah.
Yes. Climbing the belfry is also nice, of course. I think the canal boat tour was more interesting, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in the center of town, you're surrounded by tourists, which has its benefits but also its downsides. And all of the restaurants right around the belfry are advertising the exact same food, which is mussels and frites. So I did decide to taste that, but it wasn't that much of an impressive taste. So I'm not going to highly recommend it, but it's a local food. It's very good. And Mina had the water zooey, a local traditional soup. It's kind of a watery, milky soup with vegetables and chicken.
You don't sound like you're quite recommending that, but...
I'm a vegetarian.
Okay.
But it was quite good. It's a creamy Flemish stew. It's very traditional, and Mina enjoyed it a lot. So I would recommend trying it. I always like to try local food.
Okay.
So I did say that the downtown was very touristy, but the good thing is Bruges, although it's a small medieval walking city and you can walk everywhere, gets very quiet when you leave the central downtown. So if you stay in a hotel, it's not that busy if you're away from the downtown, and it's a little bit cheaper. And every time that you're walking around the city, you're probably going to be going through the main downtown square. But then as you walk away over a bridge, over a beautiful canal, you're on the same type of beautiful cobblestone streets with 300-year-old buildings, and it's quieter and nicer. And you have just as many restaurants, and the food's probably a little cheaper. So we really, really enjoyed walking around Bruges. We stayed there for 2 days. We did, however, cut back on museum going. So the only museum we went to was a Choco Story Museum, which I do recommend. It was delicious and interesting and fascinating. For me, most memorable because they had the adults' displays at eye level for adults with tons of information going back all the way to the Aztecs and the Mayans. And then below, using Playmobil figurines, dioramas for children to view about chocolate, the history of chocolate.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, Bruges, I'd have to say, was the first time that I felt like I was really in Europe. Now, of course, partially that's because of the misconceptions and the preconceptions that I brought with me to Europe. And it was only, I think, our third day in Europe on the first trip we did there. But it was the first time I saw this kind of medieval city, one of these cities that time forgot, because it was a very popular, rich city whose harbor silted up. And so it didn't have the money to tear down the old buildings and build up the new ones, which the other cities we'd been to so far had. So obviously Europe, most of Europe has moved on, and it's only these little places that were so poor they couldn't afford to update that we now call these precious gems like Bruges.
Exactly right. Ghent had a similar history as well, I think, in terms of the one section that remains medieval. So I did want to talk about beer for a minute. One of the highlights of my trip was the Belgian beers. And I don't just mean the plethora of hundreds of varieties of Belgian beers. I actually want to specifically mention the Trappist beers.
So okay. Mm-hmm.
What inspired me was a article in Afar magazine called Tapping the Essence of Belgium. And you can link to that, I think, in your show notes. And it's a beer lover's tour of Belgium. So even though my wife is pregnant and could only taste a sip, I decided to try all 7 official Trappist beers,
okay,
which became challenging because although 6 of them are imported to the United States and you can get them at bars, there is one outside of Bruges called West Vleteren that apparently is extremely difficult to get. It's rated number 1 on beergeek.com. It's called the world's greatest beer by some. And it's right now on eBay about $200 a 6-pack in New York City. So you can imagine the challenge involved. I mean, it's not actually incredibly difficult to get one taste of it because you can drive to the Abbey, and across the street from the Abbey, you can drink a single serving at the local bar across the street.
And let's not assume that everybody understood why you're driving to an Abbey to get a Trappist beer, that everyone understood what you meant by a Trappist beer.
Correct. Let's back up. So beers have been brewed for hundreds of years, thousands of years. There is one style of beer called Trappist beer, Abbey-style beer, it might be called. And that means that it's brewed originally by monks. But nowadays, you could open up your own Abbey-style brewery, but there are only 7 true Trappist Abbey-style breweries that are actually staffed by Trappist monks. And they have a seal of approval on the bottle, and they're regulated. So you can buy tasty Abbey-style beers, but there's only 7 that are officially Trappist products.
Mm-hmm.
6 of them are imported to the United States. You can get them anywhere. One, the company that makes it, the Abbey, West Vleteren, they decided to – I mean, maybe they didn't decide it. Some people think it's a marketing tactic. But you can only get the beer by calling a phone number, waiting till it's not busy, making a reservation, using your license plate number once every 6 months to pick it up. And they claim that they do this to make it fair because they don't want to produce more. They don't want to be a mass producer. So they produce small batches. And since it's rated the number one beer, it's a supply and demand problem.
Hmm. Okay.
So what makes these beers special, they come in 2 styles, double and triple. The double is a brown, kind of malty, spicy beer with flavors that border a little bit on kind of herbal and chocolatey, and they have some of the yeast still in the bottom of the bottle, so you don't pour out the last drop. And okay, it's extremely tasty, but it's also high in alcohol. The triple is a golden ale. It has spice notes, but it's not as hearty and earthy as the double. Both of them are high in alcohol content, higher than usual. So the problem with these beers is you can only have one really at a sitting, I think. Maybe you can have 2, but it's a lot of alcohol. And what makes them so special is they just seem to have more flavor and more body than other beers. I was able to taste the very difficult to get West Vleteren beer because it's available at some specialty beer stores by the bottle. So when I went up to the Netherlands to visit my cousin, she got a bottle. And apparently there's another beer that's supposed to be extremely similar because the monks of West Vleteren used to brew at a different brewery and left their secret recipe with them when they left the brewery. So it's called Saint Bernardus, and you can buy it in the United States. I got it at Whole Foods last week. And it does taste very similar. So we did a taste test with glasses with each beer. And my pregnant wife with her excellent nose was able to tell which was which while the rest of us struggled a little bit. But we were able to finally differentiate. So at the same time as it's a very special, very unique beer, you can still taste it if you're willing to try Plan B version, the St. Bernardus.
Excellent. And then we have, I think we're probably not going to get to the side trips to Luxembourg and Netherlands, but we did have the other end of Belgium that you went to on this trip.
Correct. So I will mention just briefly, we went to Leiden, which is a college town in the Netherlands, and we went and saw tulip fields.
Oh, so wonderful. If
anyone has extra time, you can definitely tack on visiting the Netherlands from Belgium. It's very easy by train or road. And Amsterdam also is nearby.
And in terms of timing, we didn't talk about when you did this trip, but that's going to make a difference if you're going to do a side trip to see tulip fields. You did this just recently in spring.
Right. We did this for Easter break. I'm a school teacher and I had a week off. It was great timing in a lot of ways, but very rainy and wet. However, when I looked up on Wiki Travel, apparently it rains 200 days out of the year in Bruges and Brussels and possibly also in a lot of other cities in Belgium. So I felt like we had bad luck, but maybe it was normal luck. And we did have a few sunny days or half days. The other half of Belgium, Wallonia, they speak French. We went down there for a day trip. So it's only one day, but we did three things. We started with Luxembourg, which I'm not going to cover in detail, but I will say it's a fairy tale land. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's dreamy. The city is on a precipice over two rivers that I guess carved out a little mini canyon. And it just reminded me of fairy tales. It was really charming. And I kind of wish I had more time. Also, the Luxembourg is one of the smallest countries. It's not the smallest, but it still has other sites as well to see. So I don't want to do it an injustice by pretending I saw the country. All I saw was the capital city.
Okay.
It's 2 hours from Brussels driving to Luxembourg City, and 3.5 or 3 hours by train, depending on which train you get, which is partly why we rented a car. In addition, we were able to fit in two side trips in southern Belgium in the section called Wallonia. One was to one of these abbeys where they brew beer. So we
– you know, Sam, there seems to be a theme here.
The theme
Belgium,
is chocolate
and beer. Okay.
And French fries. And that is partly why you should go to Belgium. And I really do think that the beer is special there. So we went to an abbey, and it's Orval. It was one of the six Belgian abbeys that brew Trappist beer. There's one in the Netherlands. And it was an amazing trip, even though we were only there for a couple hours, because there's an abbey ruin that was built, I think, around 300 years ago. And then I guess after World War I and World War II, they were going to build a new abbey because they wanted to use up their finances so it wouldn't be taken from them by the occupying armies. And so they financed a rebuilding but left the ruins. And now tourists are not allowed to visit the abbey unless you're on a retreat, but you can visit the ruins and you can buy beer and cheese and bread. They have a very nice self-guided tour of the abbey ruins. It's gorgeous, it's medieval, and it's kind of magical to be in this whole Gothic architecture falling apart with moss growing on it. And then, of course, the beer. Orval beer is one of the top-rated beers of Belgium, and we were able to buy it there at the store, as well as some abbey cheese, which was fantastic as well. We brought it home, and we are enjoying it today.
Excellent. And your last stop?
Our last stop was Bouillon, which is a castle. And we asked them if it's related to the word for soup bouillon, or bouillon cubes, reduction of soup. And they said the only relationship that they know of is the word bouillon possibly means boiling or bubbling. And the castle was named because the river there has a little bit of rapids, I guess, and makes that noise. And when you make a soup, you also make that noise. The castle we went to, we did not go during normal operating hours because our friend, the expat who lives in Brussels, told us that she had once gone there for a nighttime torchlit tour of the castle. And we felt that would be pretty magical and special. And the only way to arrange this now is to call the castle and arrange a tour with a private guide at night with torches. So I do recommend that anyone who is going to go considers that possibility. It was really special. The person who gave us our guided tour is named Rudy, and he told us verbally that he's the best guy and to ask for him if you want to take guided tours by torchlit. We don't know if this is something that they're going to continue to offer, because apparently 2 years ago they used to offer it on a schedule and now they don't. So it's by appointment only. It was really amazing to be inside a castle, just the three of us with torches and a guide. It was four of us, including the guide, at night with views of the city from the top of the castle. It was a really special experience. It was a highlight of the trip.
Excellent. So, Belgium, what surprised you?
What surprised me was the diversity. I thought we would be going to a place that would, I guess, feel a little bit like Amsterdam or Paris. But I was surprised. I guess Amsterdam and Paris are probably pretty diverse. But when you're sitting in America thinking about them, you just think about one ethnicity. Belgium was extremely diverse, especially Brussels.
Okay. And mostly because of the colonial experience and then also the EU, it sounds like, from what you're saying.
Correct. I think that's the reason why. I also think probably all big cities are pretty diverse, and so I should always keep that in mind. But it was, I mean, when you're eating Moroccan crepes next to a a flower show and people are speaking Arabic everywhere and they're veiled and they're selling vegetables you've never seen. It's pretty interesting and fun that you're in Brussels.
Okay. You're a photographer, Sam. So the photograph that you took that you think best captured your experience of Belgium?
I have two. In Flanders, it's on a boat in the canal in Bruges. And in Wallonia, it's at night with a torch in the castle.
Okay. And the local you met who made the biggest impact on you?
In Bruges, I went to a beer store. And the woman running it had this attitude at first like she didn't care that much about her customers. But then she warmed up a lot and she kept talking to me about beer. And I bought one beer with my credit card and then I bought another beer with my credit card and then I bought a T-shirt with my credit card. And she had an amazing selection of beers. And one of the things I didn't mention is a lot of these beers have specialty glasses, which are now starting to be advertised in the New York City subway. And so you're supposed to drink each beer in its own glass, which is kind of a waste. But it's nice if you're at a bar and they have them at the bar and they're serving you each time you order a different beer in a totally different glass shape with a logo for the beer. It's presentation. So I did buy one of those specialty glasses.
And when did you feel closest to home and when did you feel furthest from home?
Furthest from home is wandering through the Gothic ruins of the castle by torchlight. And closest to home is in Leiden, the university town in the Netherlands, because they opened a brand new bagel store. And my cousin was like, oh, you know, you never get bagels that are any good. So we went in, and the owner had built a contraption into the counter that you put a bagel on a conveyor belt, and it goes underneath the counter behind plexiglass, and there's a table saw, and it slices the bagel and shoots it down the rest of the chute and out into the owner's hands, and then he hands you a sliced bagel.
Oh, that's funny. So before we get into your last questions, I did have one correction from what we talked about earlier. Is we were both right in terms of the history of Belgium, that the Low Countries, the United Kingdom and the Netherlands, came about in 1815 with the French Napoleonic Wars. But then in 1830, Belgium split off to lead the establishment of a Catholic Belgium. So I did want to put in that correction that I looked up while you were talking.
Excellent.
So before we close this out and I ask the last two questions, anything else that someone should know before they go to Belgium?
You can do a lot of justice in a short amount of time if you plan your trip right. It's a very small country, and it's a really beautiful place to visit. I know it's a second-tier location. People are first going to go see the great cities of Rome and Paris and London. But I would not have gone to Belgium had I not had a friend there offering me to stay with her. Had I known what I know now, I would plan a trip there even without a friend.
Excellent. Yeah, I think it's better known for if this is Tuesday, this must be Belgium, probably, in terms of movie depictions of Belgium. Last two questions. You know what they are. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Belgium when what?
You're tripping on cobblestones because you're distracted by the beauty of the buildings and canals.
Excellent.
Did you trip on any cobblestones in Bruges?
I don't recall tripping on any cobblestones in Bruges, but I was younger.
Well, my wife and I were young, and we bumped into each other a lot and held each other's hand while tripping.
Yeah, just to put this in context, we were in Bruges before kids, and my youngest child is about to graduate with her second bachelor's in 2 weeks. So it's been a little while. So the last question, if you had to summarize Belgium in three words, what three words would you use?
Beer, chocolate, and fairy tale.
Excellent. Now, Sam, I think you've got a website that you didn't have, I think, the last time you were on the show. So where can people see some of your photographs?
SamOppenheim.com, and you can link to it in your show notes. I have not put up my new pictures from Benelux yet.
Well, you've got a couple weeks. This won't come out for a couple weeks. So, Sam, thanks so much for coming back on the show. And again, congratulations.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's a real pleasure.
I'm not going to do any news of the community today because I'm packing up and getting ready to go to Costa Rica. So the only news is there will probably not be an episode next week. I have three podcasts that I'm trying to get ready tonight, plus a couple of blog posts, and I still have to pack. If you have comments, please leave them on the blog post at amateurtraveler.com or drop me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. If you're in iTunes, we love 5-star reviews. It helps people find the show. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.